So what kind of transformative impact do you think people learning how to use your calibration techniques can have on the world? First of all, individuals in the world at large.
From the impact it's had already, and it's only been a decade, it's already in every language in the world, great multitude of the people are actually using it. So that answers one thing. Was it needed or desired, wanted or valued? The answer is, by the response, is yes. Is there enough positive effect on mankind? Of course there is, a very, very powerful effect. Because we see a relatively small percentage of people who calibrate over 200 counterbalance the rest of humanity, about 80%, to calibrate below 200. It's because of the power of truth. So truth is aligned with power. The more integrous and the more truthful, the greater the power. And, of course, the power goes up logarithmically. Moving even a little bit in consciousness, you know, we've calibrated many an audience. So merely, or people who read the books, just reading the exposure to the material in written form or videotapes or CDs or whatever, already has a transformative effect because the information itself has a catalytic effect. And when it's empowered by intention as well, it can have a profound effect. I mean, I've seen people jump 150 points in consciousness, you know, in the course of an hour at a lecture. The person who walked out is different than the person who walked in. And it's just they were right for it and ready for it. And all you have to hear is one thing, bang, you got it. One bang, that's all it takes, one thing.
Wow, we all want the bang in this program. Yeah. We're looking for it.
Well, we want a laugh or a giggle. That, you know, sense of humor is very important. Mm-hmm. And for spiritual, inner spiritual work, you have to have a sense of humor. And depersonalize the ego, just like the mind. Stop calling it my mind and calling it the mind. The same with the ego. You don't call it me or my ego. It's the ego. You didn't originate it. It's not yours. It doesn't belong to you. The ego was here for millennia before you were even born or thought of.
And what does personalizing actually do? It sets us in a label, doesn't it? Somehow it tracks
us. Well,
it
sets up ownership and illusion. And then, of course, the downside is it sets up identification, that I am that. Not that I have it, but I am it. That's the biggest mistake. I have a mind, I have a body, I have an ego, but I am not that. How do I know I am that? Because something stands outside all of that, which is consciousness itself, as the observer, the witness. The witness witnesses what your mind is doing and your body is doing. If it wasn't for the witness, which is consciousness itself, you wouldn't know what your mind is thinking or what your body is feeling, you know. So the core of the self is something beyond all of them, because they're just the content of the movie, but there's got to be a watcher to the movie, a watcher and an experiencer, and you begin to realize what I am is the watcher experiencer. I'm not the content of the movie. I'm the watcher and the experiencer. Mm-hmm.
Where does that come into? There's a lot of programs right now about present moment awareness, the power of now. Where does all of that fit into this?
It doesn't fit into it. You see, once you get beyond the linear, there is no then, here, now, or tomorrow. The ego puts a time track on events. That which is forever has no beginning, no ending. There's no now or then. Those are all illusions, you see? Because the radical subjective is timeless. Timeless. Therefore, you can't describe it in terms of time. To say now is just as illusory as to say the past or the future.
Oh my goodness.
All three of them are conceptual documentations. You know, if I ask the deer crossing the forest, when is now, it would look at you like, what are you talking about? It just
right.
Is. All right, so to experience self as existence then takes you out of the whole time track. It's a superimposition. And as you move into higher states, time stops. There isn't any time. Why? Because phenomena are emerging. And that's all you can say. So why do you want to put a clock on it and call it time or something? Those are all limited perceptions, you know, limited perceptions. There's neither then or now, nor the future, nor the past. Those are all illusions. The present is the closest you can come to it. And describing the time track, the closest thing would be alwaysness. You know, in the snowbank, the presence of love was with the knowingness that which you are was before all universes and will be after all universes.
So as we find ourselves these days, there's a sense of urgency, people not having, quote, enough time. Are we being squeezed out of that paradigm, out of that belief system somehow? Because everything seems to be rushing up for those of us in the linear world.
Well, it's just normal for the human mind, you know, because it realizes this limitation. So even spiritual work, you realize you've only got the rest of this lifetime to try to get to where you want to go when you leave the body.
Mm-hmm.
So even there's a subtle, you can put it to good use, you know, so that you don't waste your time. You see, because you're the steward of your assets, well, one of your greatest assets is a human existence. So as a steward of your human existence, you are, let's say, responsibly aware that time is not forever, that you have to move along. The Buddha said, rare it is to be born a human being. Great good karma is it. Great good karma is it, even be born a human being. Even rarer still is it to heard of enlightenment. And rarest of all is those who have heard of enlightenment and make the decision to pursue it. All right, so that brings then, what is the value of human existence? Huh? And how do you see the value of the world? And people who want to change the world, I say, yeah, if you change the world, eliminate this world, you're going to have to invent another one exactly identical to it. Why? Because life in this world is of the greatest karmic benefit possible. Here, in this one domain, you have thrown together all levels of consciousness, from the highest to the lowest. Every second, you're presented with an option to acquire good karma or undo negative karma. Every second, your mind is making a choice. Every second, what to even listen to. Right now, your mind is making a choice to listen to what the speaker is saying, let's say. You can also shut it off and turn on something else, you see? So every second, you're choosing an option. And therefore, like the little iron filing in the electromagnetic field, you're constantly changing your polarity in your choices, which are continuous. So this is a world of maximum karmic opportunity. Here you have the freedom to choose. There are other dimensions where you're not free to choose. There are no other options possible. There aren't any other options. You got moldy bread for dinner, period.
You're stuck with the moldy bread.
Or you're going to have to eat homemade cream puffs every night for dinner, no matter what. In other words, there's no range of option. So it seems to me this world subserves the purpose of the evolution of consciousness to the max degree. Here you can move major jumps in consciousness, and on the other side you can drop major drops in consciousness. We've seen that from great world leaders. When the beginning of their career is calibrated quite high, and by the time they left the planet, it crashed down to like 90 or something, you know.
Wow.
In recent times, world leaders who started out integrous, like Napoleon, and then with megalomania crashed.
So we've got
they
to
crowned themselves emperor and sovereign. Bang, the ego comes up, takes them down. And they fell for the power temptation, got sucker punched.